Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The principal issue before the Court is whether the Foreign Trade Antitrust Improvements Act, or FATEA, limits the subject matter jurisdiction of the federal courts. A number of considerations show that it does not, that it simply imposes another element that an antitrust plaintiff must prove in order to prevail on the merits. First, the Supreme Court's 1993 decision in Hartford Fire shows that FATEA does not go to subject matter jurisdiction. The plaintiffs there alleged that London reinsurers had engaged in an antitrust conspiracy that had a substantial effect on U.S. commerce on the insurance market.
There are
two strands to your question. One about Hartford Fire, more generally, what makes something a jurisdiction stripping statute, Judge Wood. Congress has enacted a number of things that really are jurisdiction-stripping statutes. It's very easy to do. Congress knows full well how to do it. As we set out in our opponent's brief at page 45, Congress no fewer than 41 times has said, for example, no court shall have jurisdiction over certain kinds of cases. That's a jurisdiction-stripping statute. Another example of that is the... you're right, Your Honor.
What about a reason? Do you have some good reasons besides the basis?
Good reasons for what, Your Honor?
A reason.
Well, as the Supreme Court recently indicated in the Verizon Maryland case, one shouldn't lightly infer that a statute that doesn't by its terms indicate that it's intended to strip the courts of jurisdiction, should not lightly infer that.
Why not?
Well, under Bell versus Hood, the courts presumptively have... Well, that's correct, Your Honor. As this Court has said in a related context, this Court has said that jurisdictional rules should operate mechanically. And by the same token, rules that strip courts of jurisdiction should operate mechanically. We should be able to look at the text of the statute and see, does this statute strip the courts of the jurisdiction that they would otherwise have under Section 1331 or 1337, which unequivocally confer power on the court to hear federal cases generally and antitrust cases specifically. The Congress, in certain instances, has emphatically stripped the courts of jurisdiction. Another prime example of where it did so is in the statute discussed in Shalala versus Illinois Council on Long-Term Care, where it said no claim shall be brought under 28 U.S.C. Section 1331. That's a statute that strips the courts of jurisdiction that they otherwise had under the federal question statute.
That we can treat a provision on the subject
I don't think comedy has any application to this here, and it's notable that neither the majority nor the four dissenters in Hartford Fire used comedy that way. In both opinions, the court found there was subject matter jurisdiction, found that the statutory requirements of FATEA were satisfied, and then moved on. I'm sorry, Judge Posner?
The question is, why should not comedy be a reason for, you know, this gatekeeping function of the district court, so that you don't have foreign companies, foreign issues, you know, being dragged into American courts?
Well, I think comedy should be a separate inquiry, Your Honor. Well, I think comedy is a blunt instrument if you just import its requirements into FATEA. Well, the only thing I know that sheds any light on that is the House report, which says that FATEA is not intended to disturb the court's ability to use comedy. And as I say, I think comedy is a rather blunt instrument, and it's a separate inquiry, should be a separate inquiry, both from whether there's subject matter jurisdiction and whether FATEA's statutory requirements are satisfied.
Comedy is something that a court will invoke on its own, even if it hasn't been argued by the court, right?
In some rare instances, I believe, yes.
I think it's rare instances. I think if the court thinks there is a comedy problem, it will not be inhibited in raising it by the fact that the parties have wanted it.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, the Indian government. Well, it's wholly unsupported, Your Honor, that the country of India is irritated by this lawsuit. One of the defendants is, in fact, a very large Indian chemical company, presumably has access to the Indian government. It could have importuned the Indian government to file to intervene in this case and file a brief urging dismissal on comedy grounds. That has never happened.
Isn't that just a separate process in most courts? Somebody will file a motion, as they did in Hartford, as they did in Timberland, as they did in Bentonville, to consider comedy? And is it your question really whether the tool for observing comedy is the subject matter jurisdiction tool, whether it's counter judgment or whether it's a separate extension like motion?
Right. I mean, I think it's a separate inquiry from both whether there's subject matter jurisdiction and whether there's whether FATEA is satisfied. And there's been no showing that India's ox is being gored, as it were. The plaintiff's allegations, or why it would be, the plaintiff's allegations in this lawsuit are that the antitrust conspiracy between Angus and Lupin has inflated the price of AB, thus has inflated the price of ethambutol, a leading anti-tuberculosis drug, thus making it more expensive for the poor people, primarily poor people in India, suffering from tuberculosis. Well, it's well settled that, as Justice Scalia said in his Hartford Fire dissent, it's well settled that that the Sherman Act has extraterritorial application. It's been applied extraterritorially for 90 years since the American Tobacco case in 1911. And it's not only doing that, although I think that's a laudable thing. Well, I do. I mean, foreign companies can bring lawsuits under the. Well, the primary function of the antitrust laws is to protect the American markets. That's of course true, Your Honor, but. Foreign companies and American companies who are injured by the defendant's anti-competitive actions that injure the markets are entitled to bring suit. And I don't think it's at all strange that this suit is brought in this country. One of the plaintiffs is indeed an American corporation. Many of the defendants are Americans. And one of the primary anti-competitive acts that was committed in this country is the Cook County lawsuit that was brought by defendant Angus Chemical Company and litigated in this country for 2 years before Angus voluntarily dismissed it without attempting to prove its case. So this lawsuit has ample connections with the United States, both in terms of who the plaintiffs are and who the defendants are and what the anti-competitive acts are. And defendant Angus Chemical Company is a $400 million company located here in Illinois. So there's ample reasons this case should be in the United States courts, Your Honor.
If the issue were except on domestic commerce, whether victims were victims of the antitrust laws, would that be an issue for the Supreme Court?
Absolutely, Your Honor. As the Metal Gazelle Shaft amici point out in their brief, this court in United States versus Krillick and United States versus Martin indeed held that that statutes that have an interstate commerce element, that those statutes, that element is not jurisdiction, does not go to subject matter jurisdiction, even though certain cases had loosely referred to that as the jurisdictional element. I'd like to return to Hartford Fire, which I think does very clearly show that FATEA does not go to subject matter jurisdiction. In that case, a majority of the court held, consistent with Bell versus Hood, that based solely on the allegations of the complaint, that the district court undoubtedly had jurisdiction over these Sherman Act claims. Only then did the court address FATEA, concluding in a footnote that the conduct alleged plainly meets its requirements. The court's dismissive treatment of FATEA shows that it does not go to subject matter jurisdiction. If it did,
so
Well, the court recognized in footnote 23 that FATEA might have application, but said that its requirements were clearly satisfied. And it did so only after concluding that the district court undoubtedly had jurisdiction. Justice Scalia's dissent for four justices is even more emphatic that FATEA does not limit the court's subject matter jurisdiction. I must note that the defendants flatly misrepresent what Justice Scalia wrote. On page 16 of their en banc brief, they state, "Ordinary canons of statutory construction," they have that phrase in quotes, "show that the Act defines requirements for subject matter jurisdiction, not additional elements of a Sherman Act cause of action," and they cite Justice Scalia's dissent. Justice Scalia actually said the opposite. On page 812 of the case, he explained that the district court had subject matter jurisdiction because plaintiffs had asserted non-frivolous claims under the Sherman Act. On page... Well, I know, Your Honor, but I think it's significant because the defendants cited it as the position of four judges, which the court did not disagree with on this point, and they simply misrepresented what Justice Scalia wrote, and this is my only opportunity to respond to it. Well, as I say, the majority... Well, the Supreme Court's opinion in Hartford Fire is the only case from the Supreme Court that addresses FATEA. In the related context of the effects test, the court has at least been receptive to the idea that it is not jurisdictional. In the trustees of Rex Hospital case cited by the Metal Gesellschaft Amici, the court considered the effects test under Rule 12b-6 motion, although it did indicate the result would be the same under 12b-1. So it's at least receptive to the idea. And I don't think there's any reason to think that the effects test would be jurisdictional, since it derives, as I understand it, from 15 U.S.C. sections 1 and 2, which make effect on interstate or foreign commerce one of the elements of a Sherman Act claim. And there's, as this court indicated in Sharp, the requirements of a statute do not go to subject matter jurisdiction. There's no reason to say that interstate or foreign commerce of that subject matter jurisdiction. No, Your Honor. Justice Holmes' opinion in American Banana clearly indicates that the court was upheld the dismissal on the basis that since the relevant activities happened in Panama and Costa Rica, the case failed to state a claim. And Justice Scalia...
but didn't Holmes say this is the issue that had to be examined first? Didn't Holmes say
it's an issue of statutory...
Did he say it had to be examined first?
He may have, Your Honor.
He did.
I believe you. Well, I'm sure he, back in 1909, he considered the extraterritorial application of, or not of the Sherman Act to be an important issue.
Maybe they're wrong, but that's been the assumption, as it stemming from American Banana.
No, I haven't read all the treatises, Ron.
Wait a second. Your opponent cites, don't you read these things, or have someone in your office read the citations, quotations of your opponent?
I've read a number of the things he cited, Your Honor.
We don't want to read the other thing.
I would note that Justice Scalia, returned to Hartford, the Hartford Fire dissent, Justice Scalia was writing for the four justices who took the narrower view on the extraterritorial reach of the antitrust laws, and he clearly wrote for the four, which the majority did not disagree with, that the extraterritorial reach of the Sherman Act has nothing to do with the jurisdiction of the courts. It is a question of substantive law. And guess my red light is on. In conclusion, we ask the court to reverse the magistrate judge determination that the court lacks subject matter jurisdiction, reverse the grant of summary judgment if the court in fact granted that relief, and reverse the dismissal of plaintiff's pendant state law claim. In addition, because the magistrate judge failed to consider the effect of this court's decision in Sharp and improperly took all the facts alleged by the Angus defendants as true, we respectfully ask that the court order the case reassigned to a different judge on remand pursuant to Circuit Rule 36. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, and good morning. As to the legal issue raised by the court in its call for supplemental briefs, the proper method of analysis we submit is the one followed by the district court. That is, applying the FTAIA as a threshold matter of subject matter jurisdiction.
Well, I have a practical question for you. If this suit had been filed in the state court, could you have removed it?
If it had been filed as an antitrust suit in state
court, could you have removed it?
Purporting to invoke the Sherman Act?
This suit?
Your Honor, the suit would have been dismissed.
I'm asking you, could you have moved?
I believe so, Your Honor, because...
Why? Your position is the federal courts lack subject matter jurisdiction. And the only cases that are removable are those over which the federal court has original subject matter jurisdiction. Now, I understand you could move to dismiss in state court, but I think one of the practical implications of your position, unless there's some way out, is that if plaintiffs choose to file international antitrust cases in state court, they can't be removed. And so all these comedy issues will be resolved by the state judge rather than the federal commission. That's just a consequence of saying that this is a jurisdictional rule.
That may be, Your Honor.
Does that make any sense?
Well,
Should these issues be resolved by state rather than federal judges?
Your Honor, the issue of the application of the FTAIA should be resolved by the federal courts because the state courts have no... That may well be, Your Honor, although, it's a...
That would imply that if someone files a frivolous federal complaint in the state court, it can't be removed.
Well, and, Your Honor, it's likely never to come up because federal antitrust claims are claims purporting to be...
It doesn't come up if you prevail. The reason why it hasn't come up is because people assume that federal courts were competent to make the final decision. And that's true if it's an element, but it's not true if it's a jurisdictional element.
Well, Your Honor, as...
To another practice.
Certainly.
Suppose you had stipulated in the district court that the foreign commerce requirement of the Sherman Act had been met. Would this court be obliged, sua sponte, to re-examine the propriety of that issue?
Yes, Your Honor. As a matter...
Does that make any sense?
It...
Say that all issues about the extent of commerce under the Sherman Act, both domestic and foreign, must be resolved independently by the Court of Appeals, even if it's not contested in the district court.
Yes, Your Honor, as a consequence of the determination in Congress's decision.
No, I'm asking, does it make sense? If, indeed, Congress has said it's subject matter jurisdiction, then we have to do it.
That's correct.
But we have an ambiguity. We have to decide whether it's subject matter jurisdiction. I'm asking, does it make sense for us to adopt a reading that compels that consequence?
Your Honor, I believe that it does.
Why?
Because of the proposition that subject matter jurisdiction is a...
That's certain. We have to decide whether it's subject matter jurisdiction.
That's correct.
Right?
That's correct.
So why should we make a decision that has that consequence? And you can't answer that question by saying, if you make that decision, then it has that consequence.
Right.
My question is why?
Your Honor, the policy reason for it is in the context of foreign commerce.
I think surely would agree. Look, we don't have theories in every single federal case in terms of federal jurisdiction, right? There has to be some reason for concern that maybe there isn't jurisdiction.
Yes, Your Honor.
But in this area, let's suppose for the sake of argument that the position of the Fifth Circuit majority in the Kiermaier case is a correct reading of the FTAIA. Only does one have to show direct, substantial, and reasonably foreseeable effect in the United States, but one also has to show that one particular antitrust claim arises out of those anti-competitive effects in the United States. That's a lot of work. It's a complex inquiry, I would say, at best. And so I guess all of that has to go on at the Court of Appeals or the U.S. Supreme Court or anywhere else, too. I'm not sure that's the kind of thing that people blow by easily in every case, as you might if the question is whether A is a citizen of Illinois and B is a citizen of Texas. Well, time is pretty clear. Now and then there are cases that go into bigger case books that aren't, but if Kiermaier is right, then I can't
Well, Your Honor, in the first instance, it would be in the district court, of course, and not in the Court of Appeals.
It can be raised by the loser at every court.
That's correct, Your Honor.
What's the history here? Because most courts have found
that Your Honor, that's absolutely correct.
So is there a history now that has been protracted jurisdictional inquiries
Your Honor, no more protracted than other inquiries that the district courts need to resolve as matters of subject matter jurisdiction.
That's not a very clear answer to my question. Is there some history? Could you give that to the court? Have there been cases in which a court conducted some elaborate inquiry in order to determine
Your Honor, the Carpet Group case in the Third Circuit was a case in which the FTAIA domestic impact standard was resolved as a matter of fact, involving the submission of affidavits and the consideration of evidence.
Are you familiar with the Timberland case, Mr. McLaughlin?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you remember how long it took to ascertain whether there was jurisdiction in that case?
Not particularly, Your Honor. I know the case was pending for a long period of time.
I went to the Ninth Circuit twice on that issue, and it took 11 years for determination that there was no jurisdiction.
And that was the ultimate result, that there was no subject matter jurisdiction.
I think Judge Folger's question was, are there other examples of this being a complex inquiry?
Well, I think those cases in which it's addressed as a matter of fact rather than on the pleading suggest that it is it's resolved far short of 11 years. For the FileTech case, which is a Second Circuit decision under the FTAIA, went up on the pleadings to the Second Circuit. The Second Circuit said that it looks like there's a factual dispute as to whether there's a domestic impact here, and remanded for the district court to do factual determinations under Rule 12b-1. The district court, in fact, resolved the matter under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act and said it didn't need to get to FTAIA, but then it went up to the Second Circuit again. So that was a case in which the facts underlying subject matter jurisdiction and a foreign commerce context were resolved in far less than 11 years.
Do you think there should be a different rule for foreign commerce extraterritorial issues in antitrust cases than there is, for example, for Title VII?
Your Honor, as a... Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, I have in mind on the Title VII context the Mata case in the Fifth Circuit decided well after the Steel Co. decision in the Supreme Court in which the plaintiffs rely so heavily here involving the part of Title VII that says that it shall not apply to acts abroad with respect to an alien. And Your Honor, I'm leery of saying too quickly that the court ought to consider Title VII issues in the particular circumstances of this case, because all of the cases say that in determining whether an item is a matter of subject matter jurisdiction, the first inquiry is this particular statute. And what we have here is the particular statute, FTAIA, that uses the shall not apply language, written with the backdrop, this court's decision in the uranium case, Mannington Mills, Timberlane, that... Your Honor, I don't think that that's the language of the 15-person aspect of Title VII. It's in the 15-person test is in the definitional provision of the statute, saying an employer means a business or an entity that employs more than 15 people and is not a... A 10-person employer is not covered by the Act, but it doesn't apply, but that's not the language that the statute uses, and the Seventh Circuit has held that because it's in the statute, in the operative statute, and it's one of the definitional elements, that if you held that the 15-person test were a matter of subject matter jurisdiction, that would really mean that almost every element of a claim would necessarily have to be resolved jurisdictionally. And that was one of the functional consequences of holding too quickly that something is a matter of subject matter jurisdiction that Justice Scalia was wary of in the Steel Co. decision. Your Honor, the result in this case is the same under summary judgment treatment, so that we believe that... For the result in this case, that is correct, Your Honor. We moved under 12b-1 because that was the path laid for us by the statute and every decision that had addressed the issue. We did not choose 12b-1 to take advantage of a lower burden or threshold. We moved alternatively under Rule 56, and the district court's opinion in more cases than I can count and having gone through it says that the record is clear, the record is clear, the record is undisputed. There is no evidence to the contrary in making the factual determination, the only factual determinations that are proper on this record. That is that the plaintiffs had no plan to and would not have sold AB in the United States. The raw ingredient for AB, they had no plan to and would not have sold 1NP in the United States. And there were five or six other products that when they knew we were, throughout the case, were getting at the issue that there's no domestic impact here, they said, well, we would have made a lot of other products that Angus makes and sells here. The limits of time, thankfully, prevent me from going through the numbing repetition as to each of those products that said, well, that was going to be something we might do after we were up and running with AB. We didn't talk to any customers in the United States. All we've done is about a literature search. And when I asked Mr. Schroff about one of those products, his answer was telling as to each of them. He says, as to one of those products, quote, we may need it, we may not need it. Depends on circumstances. Today, I can't tell. That's in our appendix at 164. So that kind of hypothetical speculation would doom a claim even if the plaintiffs were in Indiana as opposed to India, so that the result in this case means that where the record is undisputed, and it largely comes from the plaintiff's own documents and the plaintiff's own testimony, that the... Yes, right, and I emphasize we did do it both as Rule 12b-1 and backup as Rule 56, belt and suspenders, to make it clear that this case, in our view, failed on the facts. We had the legal principle that we thought was laid out for us, but the case for the required direct, substantial, and reasonably foreseeable impact failed on the facts. And that ultimately requires affirmance here. We believe that the court was entirely proper, the court below acted properly in treating it as a matter of subject matter jurisdiction because of the shall not apply language, which this court and other courts have deemed to be subject matter jurisdictional in a wide variety of contexts because of the legislative history, because of the backdrop of the earlier decisions that Judge Posner has referred to that set forth the domestic impact test in foreign commerce cases as matters of subject matter jurisdiction, and because of the underlying principle that because the application of U.S. antitrust laws to conduct involving foreign countries had been such a flashpoint over the years, even in relations with our closest allies, that it made eminent sense for the domestic impact requirement in a case involving foreign commerce to be addressed as a threshold matter, so that it makes sense as a matter of the plain language of the statute, the history of foreign commerce cases, the legislative history. All of the commentators say it's a matter of subject matter jurisdiction. The Solicitor General in the amicus brief filed at the Supreme Court's request in the State Oil Hiramac case on behalf of the Department of Justice and the FTC said that it's a matter of subject matter jurisdiction. The Department of Justice in its international guidelines says that it's a matter of subject matter jurisdiction. And all of the cases say that it's a matter of subject matter jurisdiction, including the Second Circuit in the Christie's Auction House case and the Third Circuit in the Tura Central case, the most recent cases to address the issue. In concluding, Your Honor, we believe that the district court quite properly determined that the FTAIA establishes a threshold jurisdictional test and correctly found that the plaintiffs had failed to meet the required standard. The plaintiffs don't take issue with the fact that if this is a subject matter jurisdictional matter, they haven't shown clear error in the district court's findings, so that we ask first that the court affirm the judgment below on that basis. Second, though, and in any event, because the factual record on which the court made that determination was undisputed on all material issues and, in fact, flowed from plaintiffs themselves or plaintiffs' own documents, the judgment also should be affirmed under summary judgment principles, even if the summary judgment standard is the appropriate mode of analysis. Thank you. Thanks to the court for the opportunity to appear.
Thank you very much, Judge Posner, Chief Judge Posner. I'd like to make a couple points. First of all, this emphatically is not a summary judgment case. The clearest evidence, I think, of that is that in Angus's first amended verified complaint in the state court lawsuit filed after discovery, Angus pled that the plaintiffs intended to make trisamino an AMP. It's undisputed that that Angus sells $30 million worth of those chemicals in the United States every year, and that the United States is the primary market for those chemicals. A reasonable jury could certainly have believed that but for Angus's state court lawsuit and subsequent post-litigation threats of further litigation after it voluntarily dropped the lawsuit, that plaintiffs, in fact, would have gone on and made both of those chemicals and created the requisite impact on the United States markets. Your Honor's opinion in, I'm blanking here, the Harbor Insurance versus Continental Bank case indicates that that's an evidentiary admission should have been submitted to the jury. And I, in conclusion, I would note that actually I believe properly that this court's decision will be the first holding on whether FATEGO is the subject matter jurisdiction. Because as Your Honor said in United States versus Daniels, judicial assumptions concerning judicial allusions to and judicial discussions of issues that are not contested are not holdings. And as far as I'm aware, we are the only litigant ever to raise this issue. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you very much.